We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 276. It is probably a rough Saturday morning for many Yankees fans out there, Scott, because they left. I just saw this stat.
22.
22 goddamn base runners on base. That's embarrassing.
I mean, it's one of those things that's you know, been a known quantity for from this team. This has been the Achilles heel. Someone tweeted me Achilles tendon of this team. I'm like, come on, bro. If you're going to say it, just at least please tell me it's the Achilles heel. I can't even handle.
Get the phrase correct.
The amount of negativity on Twitter tonight was killing me.
All time.
And I was like trying to level above it a little bit. And I just kept drinking is what got me there. But when someone comes in and says Achilles tendon, I almost lose my shit. Yes.
It's their ACL.
The ACL.
It's their ACL, MCL.
Of this team is hitting with runners in scoring position. It's one of those things. And you know, you circle the ones that you have, the opportunities that you have with less than two outs. To me, those are the big ones. When you have guys on with two outs, you know, a lot of, and there's two outs, like, it's a crapshoot. I get that. But when you have less than two outs and you certainly have no outs, you know, you better damn well do something about that, especially against subpar pitching. And the whole game plan was to get to that bullpen, and they did. They did it.
They got there in the sixth inning. I thought maybe Cora had a little bit of a quick hook on Sale, but they're being careful with him. I thought Sale looked good, all things considered. His velocity wasn't 98 miles an hour, but he was still dominating.
Yeah, but in the fifth inning, his velocity started going way down, and
Cora saw that.
They were
he
sitting
went out there
on pitches.
And pulled them.
Yeah.
And then we saw, I've said this, I said it on Twitter, I said it in the postgame video, the parade of donkeys that the Red Sox have in that bullpen is a joke. They tried to hand the Yankees the game on a silver platter. The bases loaded in the sixth inning. Workman could not throw strikes. He didn't throw a strike. Gleyber Torres actually swung at all balls. And I understand, like, he struck out on that 3-2 pitch. That was a ridiculously nasty pitch.
It was a nasty pitch.
When that is the last pitch that Gleyber Torres is expecting in that situation is a 3-2 hook. So, okay, tip your cap to Workman there. He made a good pitch. But then the Yankees load the bases in the seventh inning. Nobody outs. And that's the situation you were just talking about. It's the ones with less than two outs that are really killer. They could have made that a one-run ball game if they just made smart outs and they only got one run. And then if they had just made it a one-run ball game back in the seventh inning, the eighth inning is totally different. The ninth inning is totally different. Everybody is the tying run. Instead, they needed two, and only Judge was able to show up after the seventh inning.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that they to me, I'm circling the bases
seventh.
Loaded. Bases loaded.
Seventh
with,
inning
with
was
no
the turning
outs.
Point of the game.
Was the one where they needed to take advantage of. And then you could see that the Red Sox got desperate because they're coming in with Rick Porcello coming into the eighth inning and you know, acting as kind of like what it's really the recipe that Houston did last year. You know, they're bringing in starters to fill in their pathetic bullpen. And, you know, they saw it work last year. We see that baseball is a freaking trend league, and really that's what they're doing. It's you know, Cora obviously knows what his bullpen looks like, and he'll just figure out another starter for game three if Porcello can't go. They'll just figure it out. I'm saying if he had to go further.
Day.
Yeah. It wasn't a big deal, but you could see that they have no faith in any of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's evident. The biggest thing. And the Yankees know that. It's not like it's a surprise. Everybody knows that. And they did the game plan work. They were working counts. Like, the game plan worked on the offensive side, I should say. They were working counts. They got his pitch count up to a point where he was going to be done in the fifth or sixth inning. And then they get to the bullpen for you know, longer than two. And that's what they did. And they were able to get the guys on, just were not able to get that big hit.
And this was a game the Red Sox absolutely had to win. And it was evident by the fact that they used Porcello in this game because they did not want to go down one game, drop the first one to the Yankees, and then have David Price, who has his sphincter just shrinks up whenever the Yankees are in town. So that was a must-win game for the Red Sox. It was not for the Yankees. That's not to excuse the fact that they really missed so many opportunities. It would have been an unbelievably crushing loss for the Red Sox. But if you're trying to take away any positives for the Yankees, it's kind of still status quo as we thought 4 hours ago.
There were a couple big things that happened, I think, in this game. And we were talking about this yesterday about keys to this first game, right? And I was talking about how J-Hap, you could really turn this series in a different way if you were able to get any depth. And we saw what happened. He got zero depth. He was erratic in the strike zone from the beginning, and JD Martinez caught a fastball that leaked inside, basically and smacked the barrel of his bat, and flew right over the monster. It was a line drive, hard hit ball that went over the monster. But the thing is that when J-Hap left, we had guys come in. Chad Green was not, he was getting hit around. He did settle down a bit, but he let the Hap runners in. But I think one of the, honestly, if we're looking at the positives of this game, because to me, you need to take one of these games at Fenway, okay? Like that's it. You need to swing the home field advantage so that the Yankees have an opportunity to go to the Bronx with two games, to win the series. Like that to me is what their goal is at this point. Even walking into this game, like a sweep would be great, amazing, but you got to win one. And the fact that Lance Lynn came in and ate those innings up and saved the bullpen, for the rest of the series, really, I think is one of those things that will go unnoticed, but was a big deal for the pitching staff today.
What did he end up going, two innings?
Yeah, and he was good, man. Like, he was effective. Yeah. He let a runner on. He almost had a clean inning. In his second inning of work, I think walked a nine guy to get to Mookie Betts, and then struck out Mookie Betts on the one that I... And then, struck out Mookie Betts on that beautiful call in the outside corner.
At least if anyone's complaining about the umpire, they need to shut up because he was equally terrible for both sides. So it was frustrating, but at the same time, I don't think it benefited one team or the other. But yeah, let's kind of start at the top with Hap. You knew it was rough. He did not have his command, and then he walks Steve Pierce. So it's first and second with JD Martinez coming up. That's just asking for trouble. That's asking for a disaster.
It is. At the same time, I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, Steve Pierce didn't hurt us.
But you're not. But if you're back of even, my mind. Despite the fact that Steve Pierce is a Yankees killer, I'd much rather face Steve Pierce and attack Steve Pierce than go after JD Martinez. So, and right. The Red Sox, another key to the series that we mentioned are, will the Red Sox be aggressive on the base paths? And Benintendi gets on in the first inning, first pitch, he steals. And they also bunted twice. They bunted in situations to be I mean,
Benintendi was a drag bunt to get on base. That
right.
was a
so
base
I know,
hit
like,
bunt.
Bunting
that was
is,
not a sacrifice bunt.
Bunting is traditionally thought of as conservative, but I almost feel like that was an aggressive bunt right there. And I was getting on Voit for that play because I thought he gave up on the play too soon. I thought if he charged that ball a little harder, he could have had a play at first base.
I don't think Voit had a real play. I mean, even if he charged the ball harder, it had nothing to do with Glaber getting to second or Hap not getting to first. The point was is that it was going to be a bang bang play with Glaber getting to first because Hap couldn't get there. I mean, Hap falls off to the other side. He had no chance to get there. He had no chance to beat that out. So Glaber has to get to that bag for them to even have a play. And even if Voit was charging the ball in full steam, had plenty of time, he's still gonna have to make a firm throw, perfect throw, and maybe they get him. It would have been bang bang. So honestly, I was fine with him putting it in his pocket because I saw that ball sailing into right field.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's not. Maybe I was overreacting at the time, but it was just one of those things that there was just you could tell that the Hap was not long for the game, and it was another base runner that you just didn't need at the time with the middle of that batting order coming up. Hap gets pulled after two plus innings. He did not give the Yankees a chance in this game. Yet they still almost won the game. So
right.
I don't know if that's a positive or a negative or what it is, but that's just a fact that Hap, if you had told me before this game Hap's going 2+ innings, I would have said, okay, well then the Red Sox are winning 9-0.
Yeah, but I mean, we know that this team is never dead, and as soon as you get into that bullpen, that, you know, there's an opportunity to do damage. So, you know, look, the bottom line is that Hap, you know, had a very, very, very early horrible pitch to JD Martinez that he put out of the ballpark, and that was it. That was the big turning point early in the game. If Hap could get through that, like, you're probably seeing an inning or two more than Hap, because he's had trouble early in games before, and then he settles down, and he just couldn't get to that point. And I think the Red Sox
weren't going to let him get to that point.
No, they were.
That's the thing.
That is,
if this is a regular season game, you let him stay out there. You're not going to let him stay out there in a playoff.
That's
game.
I don't mean the fact that, like, you let him stay out there after that home run. I'm saying if he were to get to the if he's able to get Martinez in that situation, you could see Hap settling down and going another two, you know, maybe two innings. But it was a big pitch. JD Martinez put barrel to the ball and smacked the ball into and beat Jay Happ on that one. And that was it. You knew he was done at that point. Like, he's going to be taken out probably on the, you know, I think he let, walked a guy, or it was a base. No, it was a base hit to start the next inning. And then Boone pulled him. And you know, there could have been a couple of reasons. Boone pulled him for one, not being effective, but also early enough where you can bring Jay Happ back at an opportunity later in the series. You know, maybe earlier than you normally would, where, you know, potentially he could be effective against the Red Sox.
That's actually a question I put in here. We had on Twitter from at EddieC85. He says, does Hap start again if it gets to that point? But I do like your point there, that saying, well, Hap might be a factor in game four now if they need him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's very valid at this point. He didn't throw enough. I mean, it's probably similar to what Porcello, you know, he definitely threw more pitches, but you could definitely come back on a game four for this.
I mean, he could have. I mean, he would be on short rest even if he threw a lot of pitches on game four, but he only threw 44 pitches. That's like an extended bullpen session.
That's
so
exactly
it. If they need him for two or three innings in a game four elimination, maybe we see that happen, because it's if you're loser, go home, then you don't play for tomorrow. You play for the day. You play for tonight. And it's kind of funny, because I almost think, like, the Red Sox played like this was an elimination game for them. That's how they treated this game.
No, they did. I mean, they knew that they had to win this first game. I think it was a momentum swinger. Cora knew that. That's why he brought Porcello into this game, because at that point, that was at that moment the biggest thing that they needed to do was win game one. They could not lose the first game in Fenway Park against the quote underdog Yankees in front of their buzzing home crowd after the season that they had. They just couldn't do it. Morally, optically, it would have been a bad loss.
Especially after they were up 5-0 in the sixth inning with their ace on the mound.
Yeah, and I think Cora does have one of, you know, I give him a lot of credit for having. He seems like he's one of those managers who has a you know, he's very connected to the pulse of the team, And I, you know, I think he pulled the right moves in situations when he had to. It's not like he has a lot to work with his bullpen. So you're kind of running a crapshoot at that point, and that's why we saw Porcello in the game.
And then we move on to the fourth inning, and Hicks has a good at bat, his second good at bat of the night. The first one he worked a walk, and then he had, I think it was a 9-pitch at bat, gets a single, and then you see the trainers trot out there. And you're like, all right, things are. This is how this game is going to go for the Yankees.
Yeah, it's not good, obviously, to see him with that. It was an aggravated hamstring, or I don't know.
Remember. Right hamstring soreness or tightness.
Okay.
So and if you're wondering, hey, what was that hamstring injury he had a couple weeks ago? Well, that was his left hamstring.
Yeah, but his hamstring, he's got weak hamstrings. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got him and Tanaka both.
Yeah, I was just gonna say
they do the same.
He goes to the same UI soft tissue.
They go to the same UI trainer. Their trainer doesn't work hamstrings. Apparently, it's like we saw Aaron Hicks's Instagram videos. He's swole from the chest up. You know, there were no pictures of Instagram doing squats.
Can we get Foam Roller to give Aaron Hicks a sponsorship or something to loosen those hamstrings before he's out there sprinting to first base?
Yeah, it's bad. You want to hear something just totally sparked? It's totally random. I had my first obsessive parent sports moment where I couldn't find. I'm looking for like a foam bat for Kemp, like a foam bat that's his size, and I legitimately can't find one. So I was in a store and I saw a foam roller for hamstrings.
No, hold on. So, can I guess?
So I mean, you, it's pretty obvious at this point. Yeah, I whittled a bat out of a foam roller, and it's perfect.
Can you tweet out a picture of that?
Yeah, I will. I will. I even drilled a hole down the center of it so that I could add a stability rod.
You put a little tape on the handle or a little pine tar on the handle?
No pine tar on the handle. I figured he would, that'd be bad for ingesting because he eats everything. Yeah. So he's not so much swinging the bat at a ball at this point. He's more eating, trying to eat the bat. We're working on swinging things. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, so, he won't injure himself by swinging a foam roller.
I don't think so.
No. He probably could have done better than Stanton did tonight.
Oh, yeah. Because Stanton, well, I mean, if he can learn to swing the bat.
For Giancarlo.
If my little boy could learn to swing a bat. In a situation in the pivotal point when you're just looking at three pitches, come on, dude.
Well, that's one thing is he looked totally overmatched looking at a strike three called in the ninth inning. But the biggest at bat of the game was Stanton in the seventh inning with bases loaded and nobody out.
Yeah.
And he struck out.
Yep.
That's the biggest at bat of the game.
You can tell when Stanton's going to strike out. Well before he strikes out,
you could tell after one pitch.
Yeah, the last in the ninth inning, I'm sitting here with my wife watching the game, and I'm like, he's gonna strike out. I can tell right now he's already done. He's done. He was fooled by the first pitch, and then the second pitch was a fastball blown by him, and I'm like, all he's got to do is throw anything off speed that looks like it's gonna be in the strike zone, and he's gonna swing and he's gonna miss horribly. And that's exactly what happened. Like the dude, he's just, you could tell that when he's uncomfortable in an at-bat that it doesn't end well. It just, he's not able to re-find that, that feeling or that zone or whatever the hell it is that these guys feel. He's not able to get back to that point where he's has any type of confidence to make contact with a pitch.
Right. And if we're going up and down the lineup, just assessing performance tonight, and assessing at-bats, I thought McCutchen had some good at-bats. Judge was locked in all night.
Yep.
The two at-bats that Hicks had before he left with an injury I thought were really good. He looked locked in.
Yep.
So your first three guys in the order were looking good, and then Stanton comes up there batting cleanup, and he's just totally lost.
Didi also looked really good. He just missed a home run.
And missed a double down the left field line.
Yeah, he looked good.
And Voit had two RBIs tonight, yep. So it's really Stanton was kind of the hiccup in there. And I'm not saying it's all on Stanton, but if he does something positive there in that seventh inning, it completely changes the entire game.
If we're talking about at-bats and we're going up and down, to be fair, and looking at all of them, Glaber looked lost, and Andujar did not look good either.
Totally lost, yeah. But Glaber's
not been good at the plate for quite some time now, again. He's rolling into another one of these streaks.
Very, very... So one thing that I have no, so with Glaber in that at bat with Workman didn't throw a strike to Gary Sanchez.
Right.
So that's four straight out of the strike zone.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing swinging at? And then he threw ball one to Glaber Torres. What the hell are you doing swinging at the next pitch?
Yeah.
He swung at a slider outside. That would have been ball two and six straight out of the strike zone. Instead, you're letting Workman get back into that count. I don't know if that's a sign that needs to be coming from the dugout to say take there, or if Glaber Torres just needs to understand I'm taking this next pitch. But when a guy is throwing five straight balls coming out of the bullpen in a key spot right there, you don't swing the frickin' bat.
I don't know. There's a couple things here. If a professional pitcher has thrown that many balls, you're looking for him to come back to the plate at some point, right? So my thought is that the batter, who's also a professional batter, should be looking for something specific, right? At that point, he should be looking for something that he wants to hit and in a zone that he wants to hit so that he's ready to go if for any reason this ball comes into this zone. So if I'm Glaber Torres and he's looking for a fastball on the outside corner, let's just say that's it, and he's looking for that pitch. And if he sees that pitch, he's going to swing because now he's locked into one pitch and it all comes down to pitch recognition. If he can recognize a fastball coming out of his hand and the pitch is where he wants it to be, and he already made this decision before the pitch happened, this is classic A-Rod, by the way, then you as a professional hitter and a good hitter like Glaber Torres, who can put bat to ball, is probably going to take a good swing, and I'm confident in that you're going to make contact in that. So I have no problem with you swinging at that if that's your game plan. But here's the deal. he's been struggling for so badly lately that I think that he's just not recognizing pitches. I think that he maybe thought that was what he thought he saw, and
Obviously he wouldn't have swung otherwise.
And Workman pulled the string on him, so he's not recognizing the pitch that he thinks, because there's no way in that situation that he's just swinging freely. He's looking for something specific.
I don't think you even let him have that decision. I think you give him a take sign.
I don't know why. When
because the pitcher can't throw a strike.
Exactly. So you have to have trust in your guys that they can recognize the pitches. If they can't recognize the pitches, then it's a big deal.
Then you have trust in the guy. If it's somebody who's locked in, then you just let him do his thing. But Gleyber Torres hasn't been locked in. We just said that.
Yeah, you're still able, if you're looking for one specific thing, like that's exactly the type of situation that gets you out of a slump. That you get the one pitch that you're expecting to get. You're not going up there just trying to swing at pitches and guess what's coming. Like, you're literally only going to swing if there's a fastball on the outside part of the plate. And if that's what your mentality is at that point, then good things should probably happen, honestly, if it's thrown there.
And I know it's easy to Monday morning quarterback it, and that's what we're doing at this point. But I thought I was saying to myself as I was watching, take the next pitch, and he didn't, and it let Workman back in the count. But
About execution, though. It's all about execution and execution of a specific game plan within the count, because these guys are going up with multiple game plans. They go in in a 1-0, 2-0 count, and then they're the game plan changes on a 2-0 count. And if they don't execute what's happening at that point, then that's just on them not executing. I have a hard time. You got to believe in your guys. You can't play scared. I'm certainly not one for Aaron Boone playing scared.
I disagree. That's not playing scared. It is a little smart. Bit. That's playing smart.
No, what's that's, playing that's assessing smart is the looking situation. For something that you're actually going to hit. That's smart.
But the guy just came out of the bullpen. You could smell the dump in his pants through the television. Make him throw a strike. The bases are loaded. The pitcher is on his heels. Make him throw a strike. He took the 3-1 pitch, so he clearly had the take sign there, because no one ever takes a 3-1
pitch. You're missing the entire point here. Yes, make him throw a strike. My point is that Gleyber Torres was not reading the ball. He should have been looking for that strike.
By make him throw a strike, I mean take a strike.
No, make him throw a strike. That's where I'm at. I'm not saying take it all costs. I'm saying you look in a one zone that you feel comfortable that you can go in, and you look for that pitch. If you get that pitch, you take a good swing at it. I have confidence in my guys, especially Gleyber Torres, who's one of the guys who's talking about rookie of the year. Like, this, he's not a slouch. He's a good hitter.
If I were Aaron Boone in that situation, I would have gone up there, taken the bat out of Gleyber Torres' hands, given him Kemp's foam bat, and said, "Don't swing this thing."
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just going to hurt you at a different point when you have no confidence in a guy, and then he's going to have to take a pitch that he could have smacked out of the ballpark. I don't know. I don't like that approach. But my problem is still, I think we're at the same point in the fact that he shouldn't have swung at the ball. That's the bottom line.
Shouldn't have swung at the pitch, because it was a slider off the plate. It would have been 2-0. Instead, it's a 1-1 count, and he still works it to 3-1. Then it's 3-2. And then the hook, which was huge. At that time, it was the biggest point in the game. Then the next inning ends up being the turning point, as we've said a couple times. I thought McCutcheon, so Kimbrel comes in for a multi-inning save. That's not something that Cora likes to do. Right. We saw Kimbrel blow a save to the Yankees at Yankee Stadium early in the season. It was in May when Gardner had that triple, and then Judge had that home run. That was a multi-inning save, and it didn't work out for them. So Kimbrel is definitely not a multi-inning guy. They needed to do it tonight. Judge ends up getting the home run in the ninth inning. So another positive is that you made everybody in that bullpen sweat and work. So tomorrow, today, as you guys are listening to it, it just struck midnight. I'm looking right now. It just struck midnight. Price, he's you know how the Yankees are against Price. He's got a 10.34 ERA against the Yankees this season. So if you can get to Price a little early and get into that bullpen again, that's the strategy. It almost worked tonight. It'll start working.
That's it. They just got to continue. They got to be patient. They have to be patient in Fenway and get back to this bullpen. But you know, when you're patient and you're letting things develop, you still have to take advantage of opportunities. And you're being patient for those opportunities. That's the whole point of being patient. You're waiting for your time to strike. And if you don't strike in that time, then your patience is for absolutely nothing. And you know, the all the at-bats that you're working and doing all these things. But again, game one absolutely rolls into game two, and the fact that these guys are still worked and they still got all of that, all of those, you know, that work, the work on the arms, all those pitches were still thrown. And then tomorrow, that bullpen is still garbage, and David Price is still David Price. And there's definitely a mental advantage for the Yankees. So, you know, I do hope that they can take that, you know, what they did after Hap was out, because, you know, after Hap was out, the Yankees looked pretty good. You know, they did what they had to do. It was early damage that really hurt them, and they just weren't able to overcome it.
Right, Lynn. I didn't think that Chad Green looked good. He gave up a lot of hard hit contact. Both of those runs from Hap scored, but Lynn looked really good. Britton looked solid. D-Rob looked solid.
Yep.
So you didn't have to use Betances or Chapman, or who else am I missing in that bullpen? Holder didn't pitch. Tarpley didn't pitch. Anybody else?
Any of the starters? No. I mean, if you're bringing in a guy like, but no, I think that's it.
Right. So if you can get, I mean, the game plan is Tanaka five, go five innings, and then I guess you go to Chad Green and hope he has a better night, or do you go to Holder?
I think Chad Green is not going to pitch tomorrow. I think he's probably burned at this point. He threw two innings, right?
Holder. Yeah, you're right. Actually, he did throw two innings. So you got Holder, Robertson, Betances, and Chapman.
Yeah.
And Britton.
I mean, I like my
five
odds.
Five guys
there.
Right there.
And
right.
And I like my odds there. But, and we know D-Rob can throw like 18 innings. So.
Right, he's got a rubber arm. and epic sideburns. Those things just keep getting longer. And just a little centimeter every time he goes out there. A little bit longer. He's pushing that facial hair roll. But Tanaka has got a 7.58 ERA against the Red Sox this season.
Yeah.
So this could be a slugfest in game two.
I mean, it could be. Or we see, you know, postseason lockdown Tanaka on the road Tanaka. You know, we joked yesterday about having Ichiro in the stands or just like an epic line of Japanese all-time greats in there for Tanaka. But, I mean, that's it. I mean, it seems like in big situations and in big games, and we joke about that because in the regular season, you know, those are bigger games for him, because when he's going up against a Japanese countryman, I mean, the guy's huge in Japan. So it's, I don't think any of us can actually, you know, quantify how popular those games are in his home country.
Right.
But the bottom line is he gets up for those games. And I think, you know, we're looking at a game similar to that in the sense that it's high pressure, high leverage, high attention. And, you know, he's traditionally done well in those games, unless it's Derek Jeter day. And Derek Jeter is nowhere near the
ballpark. Yeah. So, any other thoughts on this game or on tomorrow's game?
You know, it just seems like JD Martinez is the guy that they really need to be careful.
He hit the home run in the first inning. He almost put one out to right field.
Yeah, JD Martinez just looks very much locked in. He's looked that way all year. He's by far, I think, the scariest hitter on this team right now, and they just got to be really careful with him. They cannot let him beat them. And I know there are other guys on this team who have the potential to beat them, but he just strikes me as the guy that, you know, you really need to avoid damage from at all costs.
Well, that, you know, that starts with not putting runners on base in front of him.
That is very true.
So if JD Martinez is going to hit a solo home run, okay.
Yeah.
But when he's hitting two-run, three-run bombs because you walked Steve Pierce in front of him, it's unacceptable.
Yep. No, that was the big deal. The fact that there were runners on base and that ball flew out, that was the killer. If that was a solo shot, like you're just saying, and you're going aggressive with him, you know, with nobody on base, you know, I'll brush off a solo shot.
You can live with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't live with three-run bombs.
No. Not on the road to Fenway.
Right. What'd you think of Ron Darling tonight?
Oh my God.
it's epically bad.
Holy shit.
When he said that Gardner touched, Bogarts? Was he turning
the double
play?
Oh, yes, sliding. Yes, it was.
Sliding?
Yes.
And the ball, like, they showed the replay and Voit, was it Voit? Oh God, it's late and I'm losing my mind. It was either Voit or Gardner sliding.
It was Gardner.
Was it Gardner?
Yes.
Okay. So he did maybe barely touch him, but the ball was two-thirds of the way to first base at that point.
No, it was Voit. It was Voit. Gardner was sliding later Voit. And broke it up. It was Voit, my bad.
Right. It was Voit there. And I'm like, oh, the Reds. He's like, oh, the Red Sox could challenge this play. I'm just like, you can't even be mad at that because it's just so ridiculous.
He goes, you can't touch him. That's against the rules. He's like, oh, thanks, Ronnie boy. Thank you for telling us the rules that you can't touch him, you dumb shit. All I tweeted from Bronx Pinstripes was, shut your mouth, darling. I can't handle the stupidity, the utter ridiculousness from some of their comments. The fact that he's talking about JD Martinez, that's as far as you can hit a ball in Fenway. Actually, no. And you were, yeah, you were
pretty
even
sure giving, it went first row.
Yeah, but you were giving me shit for that it was 370. Okay, but 370 doesn't even get you out in freaking center field. Like,
projected to,
just
well, that was
shut your mouth, darling.
Okay, that was a missile, though.
It regardless. Was a missile, but it's still against the wall if you hit it dead center field. Like, the comment was terrible. I don't care. It was a home run. I get it. It was a home run everywhere, but whatever. I know that it's going to be slighted coming in. Like, you know that. But you know, some of them are just so outrageous, really outrageous.
Well, why do these guys keep getting jobs? If TBS is looking at this, why are they giving guys who are just openly slanted against these teams jobs?
Have
you
been,
did you watch any of
care.
Did you watch any
it's
of the Brewers
one team?
You watch any of the Brewers?
I saw a little
Rockies.
Bit of the end, but I didn't have the sound on.
Cone's on the broadcast.
Yes, and he's being held back.
But he's, I guess he wouldn't be against either the Rockies or the Brewers because what the hell does he care? But he's phenomenal.
I mean, there's a bias here. There's no doubt about it as well. Like, we love our guys with Cone especially. So I do get that there's also a bias from us too. I'm trying to be objective about that, but some of the things that they said were just outright ridiculously dumb. Cone is like, to me, is one of those guys who actually says what he thinks and just kind of says it no matter what. Even if it's against the Yankees in a Yes broadcast, he'll say something. And when he's on these national broadcasts, it's like a timid David Cone.
Right, because like he doesn't have as much passion behind
yeah,
him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know who's with him? AJ Przinsky.
Yes, and he was on that. He was on one of the Fox games, I think, on a Saturday.
Yeah. So I question these producers who are giving these guys jobs. Like, AJ Przinsky has been from day one mocked for how bad he is, yet he still has a broadcaster job. Ron Darling and Eckersley were terribly bad, terribly slanted in that wild card game, and here we go again. Ron Darling in for five games
but
in the series.
They're pulling guys from local broadcasts all
they're
over.
They're all
right?
local,
right?
Right
they're
yeah.
not. They're not like general, national guys. Kind of like football does. Football has national guys, and then they have more local guys,
right?
And that's it. Well, they're pulling guys from everywhere. So, I mean, I could understand how
put nationally guys on the American League games and vice versa.
Then they just won't know anything. then they'll just be really dumb.
Cone knows what he's talking about for the Brewers Rockies.
Let's all be honest. Cone's a savant. Cone's a savant. Nobody's as good as Cone.
I don't know if you saw I tweeted this out, but I got the I'm going to bed text from my dad at 8:50 p.m.
I did see that. People are very interested in what your dad is thinking and knowing because there's a lot of follow-up tweets. The people are looking for some follow-up tweets from Pops.
Yeah, well, the people keep asking for my dad to get on the podcast, and I know he's probably listening to this right now. So, yeah. Dad, we're going to get you on here.
Yeah,
one day.
I think we absolutely need to get him on. We need to. Yeah. I need to hear this. I need to.
Well,
I need
you
to
know
where this all came from.
Remember when Kemp was born?
I do remember when Kemp was born. Yeah.
Well, but I was going to say, you remember how it was a last minute thing, and you texted me like an hour before we were recording, like, "Hey, you're going to need to find a co-host."
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost my dad that night.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah,
that would have been. So. I think it was JJ, right? Was JJ?
JJ and Dom for that episode.
Yeah. But. All right. Well, we got another one tomorrow, right? Or today, as everybody's listening, we got another one today, and it's another night game because it's Yankees Red Sox.
I also tweeted out the start times for these games. Bunch of weird ass start times. It was 7:32 today. It's 8:15 tomorrow. I think it's 7:40 on Monday. 8:07. It's just a bunch of weird ass times.
God forbid they give us a day game. God forbid.
Well, that sucks for Cleveland, Houston. They're playing all day games.
Oh, I mean, can you imagine the people that are following them? The podcast.
I'm not
people,
talking about that.
The podcast people that are following them, they love it.
Well, the podcast people do, but
that's what I'm saying.
But for the players, that's got to be a little odd, right? You're not used to playing that many day games in a row. Who knows? Probably doesn't matter.
I don't think it matters. There's still like the same amount of time between. I would love it if I were a player.
No, you know what the best were last year? Remember those like 5:30 start times?
Yeah, those are nice.
Those are the best.
I could get behind those. Although yes. Tonight wasn't epically long. I'm okay with the, you know, the way that things happen. I'm still relatively awake.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow will probably be like...
Tomorrow. depends how the game goes.
If it's an offensive game like it's might project to be, it might be like 4 o'clock in the morning before that thing ends.
Yeah. I can't watch these games with people. I've realized that. We talked about this before yesterday. I had a buddy over.
We're too invested.
Dude, I just can't watch. I can't watch with anybody. I'm not going to talk to you. And two...
Because you got a million things going on with Twitter and Facebook and all
two,
stuff.
I'm a lunatic. I'm sitting here screaming at myself, pacing, like literally talking
to myself. You were pacing
tonight
too? So in the first inning alone, I stood up and sat down 5 separate times.
You should see the ridiculous.
Leanne's like, what the hell
right
are you doing? I just kept standing up and sitting back down. I wasn't even walking around. I was just standing up and sitting down.
I have moved my kitchen table into my living room against my couch so that I have like a full setup behind my couch because I normally have a stool so that I can stand and sit because I can't sit for a long period of time. I have
Your
to like
back hurts.
I'm antsy. I can't sit down for a long time when I'm watching these games. I need to move. And so it's my house is in shambles right now. My wife is not very happy about it, but she really has no choice.
Well,
at this point, it is what it is.
Potentially 4 more in this series.
Yeah, here we go. Look, at the end of the day, like final thoughts, they lost the game. They missed opportunities, but you know what? There are some positives and some good takeaways from this game. The fact that they did what they did with half, you know, just shitting a bed and going into the second inning, and then some guys coming in and playing hero like Lancelin, I think was a very big part of this game. And then the offense came back. Judge just continued his ownership and is so clearly ingrained in the back of Kimbrel's mind. He can't get him out, and he knows that. And I love it. And that's going to come back to haunt him at some point. So I think there are some positives, and they just need one. So tomorrow's a huge game. Tomorrow is a massive game. We need Tanaka to come out there and be the good playoff Tanaka.
Right. Like I said, this loss, while it did suck, didn't really change anything. It's still status quo in my mind.
Yeah.
Whereas if the Red Sox had lost, it would have been completely shifted this series. So go out there, attack Price, and win game 2.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.